This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget how great a price has been paid for our freedom. And of course, along the way, we learn what we can learn from these people who were there and answered when our country called. Every so often, we have to spread a veteran story over two programs. And if you missed our last show, you missed Jonas Hofer tell us how he broke his back as a high schooler, didn't know if he'd ever even walk again. But after a remarkable recovery, he was a great pole vaulter and ended up enlisting in the Navy at age 17. We heard about his time aboard the light cruiser USS Houston and the torpedoing of that ship. Most of the ship evacuated after the first torpedo hit. Jonas remained aboard, and when the crippled ship was torpedoed again days later, he would have to abandon ship as well. He was floating in the water overnight, a total of as many as 16 hours before he was picked up the next day, rescued by the crew of the destroyer USS Grayson. If you missed that last program with the first half of his story, I hope you'll pull up the podcast online because there were some pretty intense and noteworthy moments. But as we enter into the rest of Mr. Hofer's story today, let's pick it up with his description of that time that he spent in the water near Taiwan nearly 70 years ago.
There was a lot of wood and stuff and seats and different things in the water. There was a lot of that stuff in the water, a floating metal and some metal and that there. See, the tornado had went through there about 3 days before that, and so we had white caps go over our heads all the time, and you was wet continue. But the water temperature was 87 degrees. So it was warm when you started out. But by the next day, when it had been in it over 12 hours, I think I was in it, I'd say 14 to 16 hours, somewhere in between. I was so weak from being in the water so long. And of course, we hadn't eaten in maybe 30 hours that I couldn't even climb the ropes on the ship. What the Grayson did is they couldn't stop, because then they'd get a torpedo. So they kept going, but they put a boat. And the boat took one circle, picked up eight of us, and then while they were picking us up and we was getting on, a torpedo went under the ship. The sailors said it had been set a little too deep, maybe for a battle wagon or aircraft carrier. So then when we got up, of course, and got on, two sailors came down and got me under the arms and brought me over the, because I couldn't climb. I was just so tired and that. And then Dyke says, well, let's thank the Lord. So we knelt down there and prayed. And there were about 100 sailors around us, plus officers and that. And I can remember when we prayed, they were just all quiet. There was really respect. And I really appreciate that when we, and so after I prayed, I looked up kind of and I saw these guys all standing with their hats over the like that there and looking down that. So we were really respected because we had the Bible classes, I think. I think that's why. I don't think they would have done it otherwise.
And along those lines, maybe some folks aren't familiar with what the navigators were as they were founded during that time period. How extensive was that program on your ship?
Well, the officers and the captain was for ours, for us having those there. Because they figured that the more guys that followed the Bible, the less problems they'd have in shore patrol and stuff like that, which was right, yeah. So we would have every Monday night from 8 till 9 o'clock, we would have Bible studies and verse go over some of the verse memorized the guys were, and find out how they're getting along in their Christian life and that. Of course, we had a lot of booze. You know, the guys called us old preachers and Bible thumpers, and they had a whole bunch of names. But in the wall, in the water there, they swam up to us and were all very good to us and that. And even aboard ship, like I say, while we prayed there and that there, Of course, they realized, well, here these eight guys were just saved out of the water and that there, so they have something to be thankful for. And we were. And then what you did in your Bible studies in that, we started a Timothy program, which the navigators did. You would take one guy out from the other sailors in that, and you would work with him for about 6 months and just tutor him and get him into the Bible study in that. And then 6 months later, he did it too, so you were doubled. Dawson Trotman had it figured out that if everybody would do this every 2 years, get two like this, and then four, and then 16, in 13 years, everybody in the world would have been a navigator. Well, some of the guys never did, so you fall through that there. We started out with the two of us and started, and by the time the ship was sunk, we had about 30. We had about 30 guys that came to our meetings every Monday night. And that.
So you were one of the leaders, the originators of this on your ship.
I'll have another thing is I worked with the church, the chaplain, and I read a lot of books, still do, about one a week. Well, anyway, so he had me help in the library. So we got crowded. There was about eight of us down in our little, where our bunks were at and that, and where we got together for prayer and that. And so Dyke said, why don't you go ask the chaplain, you work in the library some, if we could use the ship's lounge. The ship's lounge had about 30 seats in there. And so I went and asked the chaplain. And the chaplain says, what makes you think we need Bible studies aboard ship? I said, well, everybody can gain with Bible studies. And then, have you been to a seminary? I said, no, I've been to no seminary. Well, I forbid you to teach them. He says, without the cemetery training, then how can you know the Bible? I said, I've studied it all my life and that there. He says, well, I forbid you. So 2 days later, I was steering the ship when the captain came up and says, Hofer, what's your problem with the chaplain? Why? He said, he put you on report, captain's report. That's like you have a small court and the captain judges you and that there. The only thing I can figure out, I asked him to use the ship's lounge. And he says, what for? And I says, for these Bible studies and navigator material. And he says, I forbid you. And I says, if I can't have Bible study, I'm in the wrong Navy. The captain says, well, when do you meet? I says, we meet on Monday nights. This was about a Wednesday or Thursday. And it says, have your next meeting in the ship's lounge. I'll be there. Wagner will be there, the other officer and the chaplain. But do the meeting the way you always do them. Don't change anything. Just do them that way. Okay. Well, it was my turn to have the meeting. We took turns. I did more praying that week. Ever done. Went to the meeting. We had our meeting regular. The captain was there. Wagner was there, administrative officer, and the chaplain, and about 15 guys in that day. Because it was a little beer, and because of more room, they wanted to see what was going on. So afterwards, they saluted and left the net. The next day on the bulletin board in the ship was, from now on Monday night, there will be a navigators meeting in the ship's lounge. From 8 till 9, the smoking lamp will be out. There will be no gambling aboard ship between 8 and 9. You're all invited, and Hofer and Dyke are holding the meeting and using navigator material. So it just turned around. Then something else happened. 2 weeks later, captain said, I remember I was steering the ship when he said, told the executive officer, says, we'll have communion Sunday. Says, go get the wine and everything. So he came back, Wagner came back a little while later. We have no communion wine aboard ship. Captain says, that's funny. I signed for 8 gallons in Sydney, Australia, just 2 weeks ago when we were down there. You check again. He went and checked. Well, he says, I found, he came back about 20 minutes later. He says, I found out that the chaplain and two Marines had drank all the communion wine. A week later, here another ship came up close. They put a boatswain chair, which on a rope over. and the chaplain was leaving, sent back to the United States. So we didn't have a chaplain a month later when the ship was torpedoed.
Well, that's a great story, and I'm impressed with the courage and the follow-through you showed there. I imagine that was a little intimidating situation there for a while, but it must have felt really good to see how it worked out.
Yeah, it was, but we knew who was in charge. Yeah, man, it was the good Lord was in charge. And this Herman Dyke was not a normal sailor. He would push, boy. He wouldn't take no for an answer. And so we just kept on with it. I don't know. It never bothered me when the sailors called me preachers and virgins and Bible thumpers and all. Didn't bother me a bit. But it was sure good in the water to know that they respected you then. And you're the same ones. And I had found in the Navy, usually the hardest guy was the first guy you could win. It seemed like the guy that wanted to take you out and get you drunk and tattooed and all that there was the first guy that would actually, when he changed, would really change, you know.
Not to put you on the spot, but it sounds like this was such an integral part of your Navy experience to have these Bible studies and the amount of time you devoted to it and all that. So one question that comes to mind when you talk about all the scripture that you memorized, was there a particular verse or passage that still today you look back on and say that was really meaningful to me during that time period?
Yeah, the one that was really real to me when I was in the water was because I had seen, you know, when we got the first torpedo, there were probably 4,000 men in the water because the Houston, there was 1,000. Canberra was another 1,200. That was an Australian ship that was sunk. There were two destroyers sunk then, and another one was the seagoing tug and that. So there could have been 3,000 to 4,000 guys in the water and that there. And here, 8 of us were picked up only out of that, all of those. And then the captain got out of there because that torpedo went out. So then later on the Kula Gulf, I started with another guy. We started the Navigator program on that. Of course, in those days, there's altogether different atom in the Navy. I'd say about 50% of the sailors at one time or other went to a Sunday school or something then. A lot of them came from the Midwest. And so it was just natural for them to be interested. And we had a lot of Catholics, sure, that were with us on that. Probably more Catholics than anything else that would study with us on that. And then one of the verses I learned, the whole chapter of Psalm 91, but it starts about in 7, 8, and 9, it says, 1,000 shall fall at thy side and 10,000 at thy right hand. But it shall not come nigh thee, because thou hast made the Lord, even the Most High, thy habitation. I took that verse kind of as my own. And I had seen 1,000 guys in the water, you know, picked up by the Japanese, a lot of them, and different camps and that there. And here 8 of us are picked up. Kind of like a miracle, you know.
Yeah. Almost sounds like that verse was written with you in mind.
Yeah, yeah. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will save the Lord. He is my God. Him will I trust.
And clearly he was worthy of that trust. While you're in the water, 14, 15, 16 hours, that's a long time to be in the water. During that time, did you ever fear that you wouldn't get picked up, or that you might get picked up by the wrong side?
No, I don't know why. To this day, when I think back how I felt then, I always felt picked up by the U.S. I just had, maybe I was just too young to be scared. Yeah, and no, I just planned all night that the next day when got light, we could see what ships were around. And we didn't do it, but a lot of them, when they were in the water, and if they came over and strafed, then they would get under the water, in the water, until the plane went over and that. We never had to do any of that. Nobody strafed us or came after us. Of course, we were out there by ourselves. I couldn't see another sailor as far as you could look on the waves and that there when we got picked up. But there were 8 of us picked up, so that boat took about a half a mile round like that there, and the destroyer just kept going about 20 miles an hour so they wouldn't get torpedoed. And then the boat came close, and the ship never stopped. It kept going while the guys were getting us on, and then they got out of there. I never feared that we weren't going to get picked up in that.
Even though the statistics say you were pretty fortunate to get picked up, and I guess this is a bit of a dumb question, but if there were 8 of you that got picked up, that means there are others that didn't get picked up. And what happened to those others?
Well, some of my friends and I were picked up by some other ships, other destroyers and that. The big ships wouldn't stop for you. The battle wagons, cruisers and them, they couldn't afford to stop. They had too many guys aboard ship, you know. And that's when you get torpedoed the easiest and that. So they would keep patrolling at 25 miles an hour. But then the small ships, destroyer escorts and them, the Phoenix was a cruiser that picked up about 25. And then when we came back to the States, there were about 100 of us on this old bucket, the SS Typhoon from Australia to Hawaii on there. And they were from the Helena, some from our ship, the Houston. There was the 8 of us. There was no other Houston on our ship coming back from Australia. But they had been picked up and other ships were coming in. So in San Francisco, we met. We had very few guys picked up by the Japanese from our ship because the battle was going and the Japanese couldn't spend time picking up people either.
Well, that makes sense. You might get yourselves killed just trying to save someone else. It's time to take a break. When we come back, we know Mr. Hofer's life was spared, but many more were not, and we'll touch on that when we return. We'll also hear about the little system of code he worked out with his family so they'd know where he was even when he couldn't spell it out for them in his letters. Pretty ingenious stuff. Before we're done today, Mr. Hofer will speak to his experience with Honor Flight and his recent visit to the National World War II Memorial as well. More of Hometown Heroes right after this.